Russ Krupnik is the managing partner of MusicWatch, a consumer research and analytics company, and we are delighted that he is joining us today for a presentation on how to achieve a harmonious audio ecosystem. So please join me in welcoming Russ Krupnik.
Thank you. So when Brad and I first had a discussion about this talk, he said, you know, can you tell everybody a brief history of what's gone on in the music industry in the last 20 years, and then give your forecast for what's going to happen in the next 5-10 years, and can you do all of that in 15 minutes? And I said, I'll do my best. So I'm just going to take you back a little bit, and just kind of a snippet, because I think there's some really interesting things by looking back that help guide us in terms of where the future might be going. So certainly we've had a lot of death, we've had a lot of destruction, and hopefully I'll talk a little bit about resurrection. From the death standpoint, when I started this presentation, I didn't realize that being in the music business is one of the most dangerous professions one can be in. It started out probably in the 70s and 80s when home taping was killing music, then iTunes killed the record store, then Amazon killed iTunes. Remember how that didn't happen? And then Spotify is going to kill Pandora, and Pandora is going to kill broadcast radio, and now Apple is going to kill Spotify. And I could spend the whole 15 minutes going through all of the things that are going to kill one another. And in fact, I think philosophically, what we really need to stop doing as an industry and shift the media as well is stop thinking about every time there's some innovation or a new service that comes out and start thinking about how do we actually begin to grow the pie of digital audio customers and even folks who buy music, you know, physical or digital music. If you go back, and here's the part that's the brief history lesson. If you go back to around 2000, and most of what we cover is in the United States, so I'll be showing you U.S. stats, but I know what the trends have been very similar across most of the EU. If you go back to 2000, 8 out of 10 people actually bought music, went into stores and purchased music, and that was almost 180 million music buyers. And they spent, in 2015 dollars, about $112 each. That's oftentimes, in the U.S. anyway, when you hear, well, why won't people pay for streaming, you know, $100 a year, because they used to spend $100 on music anyway. This is the kind of numbers where that all gets derived from. What happened between 2000 and 2014, and so far the trends I think for 2015 are going to be the same, is that we essentially lost 100 million music consumers. Down at the bottom, you can see from about 80% in 2000 buying music. In 2014, and this includes paid subscriptions, we were down to 36%. From 176 million to around 75. 100 million people simply stopped buying music. Many of them, by the way, and when we talk about the problem with the music industry, yes, there was piracy. Yes, streaming has come on board. But actually, I think the biggest problem, you know, between maybe 2000 and 2010 was the fact that most people did not make the migration between buying physical product, between buying CDs, and buying digital downloads. They just weren't interested. As iconic as the iPod and iTunes were, most people didn't participate. And what was also happening is the spending number, which was $112 in 2000, dropped down to $65 by 2014. So I think the good news looking forward is that we're now back to about 80% participation. Whether it's digital audio or streaming, whatever terminology you like, or purchasing, we've now got 80% of Americans who are now participating again in music. And I'm not including listening to AM, FM radio, which, as most of you know, is well over 90%. So we're back to the levels that we had in 2000. The challenge is we're just not monetizing them as well. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. I think one thing to understand about the music industry right now is streaming has been demonized, I mean vastly demonized, as being the cause for, you know, everything from lower artist compensation, less label revenue, and that's not actually entirely true. And if you take a look at the history, it kind of helps to inform how we should start thinking over the next couple of years. In fact, if you decompose every download that was lost in the United States, streaming really only accounted for about a third of those declines. Other things, satisfaction and apathy. At some point, we build up music collections, and it happens in every format, and we just don't need as much as we used to. In fact, where downloading started to decline first was in catalog music, not in frontline, not in new releases, because people had the music that they wanted. Or they had apathy. You know, if you were an Adele fan, you had a couple of years where there was nothing for you to buy, so you didn't purchase. The other thing, and this has been hinted at throughout the day, is about 21% of the decline comes from distractions. Games, apps, video. All of the time that we're spending with our devices and things that just didn't even exist in 2000. And then there's other things. Some people are actually listening to AM/FM radio more than they used to. There are things like piracy in there. But I think we ought to be really clear that when you take a look at the state of the music industry today, it's not just this streaming bad, streaming good argument that goes on. There's a lot of other things that are also going on as well. You know, and that's illustrated, other speakers have spoken about it, that's illustrated by how much we spend in terms of the share of our time with other kinds of entertainment, whether it's video on demand, things like Netflix, or premium channels, whether it's social media. There's actually been a resurgence in the United States in people reading physical books, or gaming. And I think one of the things that hasn't been spoken about today is the whole idea of the connected consumer, in the sense that there are a lot of consumers today who, when they listen to music, are multitasking. We've had some numbers that say, you know, 50-60% of the music that people listen to is in some kind of multitasking situation. They're either doing homework, they're doing Facebook, they're doing something else. Unlike my generation, when we would come home from school, we'd fire up the Marantz and those two big speakers. If you're of the age, you know, there may have been some herbs or vegetables kind of involved in that whole experience. And we spent 3 hours after school listening to Led Zeppelin II over and over and over again. And I think, you know, for me, that informs a little bit of a point. I wish we would stop talking about Apple's going to come in and wipe out Spotify's user base, you know, that everybody is killing everybody else. There is a tremendous amount of opportunity. I apologize, there's an extra line or two in the graphic. But if you take a look at how folks are listening to music, and this is just Spotify listeners, only 22% of their hours are spent with audio on-demand services. They're still listening to CDs. They're still listening to AM/FM radio. They're still listening to their digital download collections. And of course, they're listening to other forms of digital audio. And if we just take their streaming hours, Spotify only has a 26% share of their listeners' entire streaming area, hours. So I think we ought to, you know, start thinking about how do platforms get a greater share of their listening hours and stop thinking so much as Apple's going to steal all of the Spotify customers. So how do we go about doing that? Well, I think one of the things that's really interesting is I've heard a lot about audio versus video today. And I would argue that audio and video, in a sense, are one and the same. If you go back to, and you know, my tip my hat to being in London, this is Top of the Pops. We had American and Bandstand, but back in the 60s, you know, we would watch and listen to music, and then, you know, later in the 70s, when we got our lava lamps and our herbs, we would sit and we would look at you know, jacket covers for hours and listen to music. You know who you are. And let's talk after. And then MTV came along, and then YouTube. And I think the fascinating thing is that 8 out of 10 Spotify users are either watching or listening to their music on YouTube. And in fact, the time that they spent with video, and I'm not talking about dancing cats, I'm talking about music, watching or listening to music videos, actually takes up more time for the Spotify user than their Spotify time. So where does that go? That goes into the whole idea of reinforcing that when you take a look at the behaviors, and again, I'm picking on Spotify. It's true for a lot of the services as well. Whether you're talking about news or talk or sports, Spotify users are 27% more likely to be listening to that on AM/FM radio. They're 100% more likely to be using a service like Shazam and 50% more likely to be using social media. Pandora just made the pickup of Ticketfly. That makes sense for them because their consumers are spending 50% more per capita on ticketing. The Spotify person is more than twice as likely to be using an app like StubHub Music or Eventbrite. So I think the whole point of having to, if we're going to win this battle for time, it's going to have to be, you know, from an integrated experience that competes better against things like Netflix, things like pure social media, things like gaming. The next thing, thinking about how we grow the pie, this is kind of a standard innovation cycle, and if we had more time, I would go into it in a little more detail. But it kind of tells you where you are. Everybody's heard the term early adopters, the first one to do anything, and there's the laggards at the end. Usually, you know, when the CD player was selling at $29, that's when they actually went and got a CD player, you know, 10 years after they were introduced. In the US anyway, we're about 50% adoption of audio streaming and at about 70% of audio or video streaming. That's including YouTube. The thing that I would just point out is that non-streamers are mostly over the age of 50. They're lower indexing on some of the common activities like AM, FM, news, sports talk, on music ownership, on going to concerts or watching music on TV shows. So I think when we talk about the next customers, the incremental customers, it's actually going to be more difficult to get them than the early adopters. And the message and the positioning and everything that we do against them is going to be very different than it has been over the past couple of years. One place where I think we can get them is in the car. Most people, Les from Spotify said this morning, and I would agree, that something like 70 to 80% of the music listening is happening in the car. Well, the good news is we're seeing more streaming happen in the car. It's now about almost, and this is the internet population, it's now about a quarter of their music listening hours. But there are massive challenges, especially if we want to get to that next consumer. Some really big hurdles. People basically don't entirely understand how to use streaming in the car. For example, only 40% of Spotify users are streaming in their car in the US. And there are hurdles like, you know, in-car Wi-Fi, making it easier to connect my phone, voice activation, you know, in-dash playlisting. I think this, you know, two kind of call-outs for me is, one, the technology is going to have to get a lot better. The other thing is the education that we do has to get a lot better. We just can't assume, especially those late adopters, we can't assume that they're going to understand how to stream in the car. The other thing that I want to talk about, we've heard a lot about discovery today. I really have started to hate two words, discovery and curation. For me, discovery was something that was born, you know, years ago. I would listen to something on radio, maybe Chumbawamba or Tub Thumping, and then I'd go into what you call a high street, what we would call a big box, and I would buy that CD. There was this path to purchase. And I think what's happening is if you use a streaming service, go on and look at the curation, look at the playlist, look at the recommendations, not so much for people like us who are in the room, but for the average consumer. And I think there's a disconnect between what the average consumer wants to listen to and what we're feeding up to them, which is why when you take a look at something like Beats One, I think only about 30% of Apple Music users are actually using it. Because a lot of us really want older music, and older music can be from my generation, you know, Roxy Music or Simon and Garfunkel. If it's my daughter, older music may actually be the first Taylor Swift album. What's interesting is that discovery, and I'll use the D word, discovery of new music is actually trumped by rediscovery of older music. There are more people saying, I am experiencing rediscovery of older music than are experiencing new music discovery. And you can see that the places that they do that are very different. YouTube is the leading, and again, this is the internet population, the leading place to discover new music and artists. But when you talk about rediscovery, this is a place where online radio has a real advantage because it's services like Pandora that are doing a better job of serving up rediscovery. The other thing that I want to mention before closing out is I think we've got a huge messaging problem that needs to be corrected. And I'll just pick on Tidal, but they're not the only ones. We're talking to consumers about things like fidelity, things like engineering, things like the interface, things like social, things like exclusive and Windows. And like, let's be frank, what percent of the population actually cares about a Nicki Minaj exclusive on Tidal? It's very small, and the research says it's very small. And I think that's one of the reasons, and I'm not taking a stake of whether you should be ad-supported or whether you should be paid, but I think if we're trying to build the base of paid subscriptions, we've got to get away from messages that are very kind of communicating to folks like us and start talking to more mainstream people. For me anyway, and this is just happens to be my example, the argument is, well, why should I pay when there's free? There was always free. When I was a kid growing up, there was free radio, and the radio was great. There was album rock. I grew up in New York. Stations like NEW were absolutely terrific. But the difference was I had the ability, the reason why we went out and bought Abbey Road or Led Zeppelin II or Nevermind is we had control. And I don't think that the streaming services have got the messaging right to the consumers, or at least to the biggest group of consumers, as to why they should step up and pay a fee. And what happens is it doesn't matter whether it's $9 or $3 or $2, consumers aren't getting the value proposition. That has to be built. So those are just a couple of thoughts that I have. I think we really need to get away from this whole idea of slaughtering one another in the music industry and probably in the radio business as well. This is a really big pie. And from my perspective, the pie can only grow if we figure out the right messages, the right locations, the right platforms for the right consumers. And that's it, and I thank you. I think, Brad, we're a little bit over. Do you want to take one or two questions, if anyone has?
You can take one question.
One question. I can't see, so Brad's in charge.
Is there one question? Quickly, if so. No, but thank you, Russ, for that wonderful
You get session. The time down.